My name is Hazel Lau. A man at our church calls me the Chinese lady because it resembles, he thinks, Chinese, but my husband's people all came from Germany.
From Germany.
And I was born in a little town in Ohio, just about halfway, about 20 miles from Dayton, Ohio. And we lived there until I was about 6, I believe. Then we moved to Greenville, which was a county seat of Dark County. And Dark County is a border county to Indiana. We were just halfway between Columbus and Indianapolis on the Pennsylvania. That's one of the reasons I think my interest in trains is very acute. But I had a very, very interesting life. I can remember an uncle of my father's coming to visit us when he was married. He was in Birmingham, we had a hard, cold burner to keep us warm in the wintertime. And he and his wife came out, and he put her shoes on, and we'd never seen anything like that before. And that was a great experience. I think we children stood around and watched that poor woman. I felt so sorry for her afterward. Many years after, when I went to Birmingham and visited with her, we talked about it, and she laughed about it too at that time. And I am now 88. I was born in 1892. I went to this little school, the first grade in the county, out of Gordon. We had to walk, and talking about the mud. We waded mud, and oh, how we enjoyed it. We had such a good time, and my mother had a fit when we'd get home at night. We were mud from head to foot almost. But anyway, they didn't fix roads then as they do now. And talking about improvements, I think one of the most fascinating things, and this happened in all my life, is the fact that they paved roads and transportation was made easy. Because then it was almost impossible to get anywhere, and when it was really bad, you never did go anywhere. And then in this little town, too, the railroad ran between Union City, Indiana, which was on the border of Indiana and Ohio, to Dayton. And whenever the passenger trains came through, we always went down to see them. And after we moved to Greenville, and the Pennsylvania ran through, as I grew up, and all the young people met at the railroad station. There are quite a lot of courtships that developed at that place then. So it was a very interesting place to be. But I remember so much in this little school in Gordon. There were two rooms, but in the most of the time, the adult room was sixth grade over, or maybe, I don't know, but I believe it began at the sixth grade. But one time, while that class was in session, I remember we went in from recess, and the teacher in that room was a man, and a very unwielding sort of a person, and he had a boy strapped with a broom stick at his back, put through the the things that hold the desks together, and had his feet tied down on either side to a desk, and then on the other side his arms up high. And he was doing it for punishment. I don't know what the boy did, but anyway, I thought I had never seen anything so cruel in all my life. So it was a very interesting place, but our first teacher, Mary Dilts, was a very that isn't exactly the word I want, but anyway, she was a very old maidish type of a person. That's a long skirt and the hair all up on her head. And that reminds me, I saw a woman at church this week with her hair, just a young woman, a beautiful young woman with her hair on her head. So we're going back to the old times. And we belonged to the Methodist Church from our very early beginning. We always had a Methodist Church. But a number of years ago, 1974 to be exact, I had gotten to the place where I was so dissatisfied. I wasn't getting out of the church what I wanted. I felt there was something more I should be getting. So this woman, a neighbor of mine, came to me one day and she says, Hazel, do you believe in the Ten Commandments? And I said, well, yes. Well, what about the fourth? And I thought about it, and I thought about it. And that bugged me so, I thought, well, why don't I believe in the fourth, and why don't I follow what's being taught? So she took me to her church, where they were having services, and I joined that church, and I've never had so much peace and joy in my whole life as I have since I belonged to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Oh. I really have enjoyed it. It's just unbelievable, the comfort that it has given me. So I'm very happy with that. And then there were six children in our family. My mother was always at home. She never went anyplace. And after I was in, had grown and went into training as a nurse's, to take nurse's training, my mother started going places, and I thought that was a queer thing because I never remember my mother having anything but an apron on. That was always her chief dress, part of her dress was an apron. But we were all local people, so we had no foreign languages of any kind. And when we were in this little town of Gordon, they always had a Christmas tree, but it was a deciduous tree with all the gifts. Everybody brought their gifts for their children and all to put on that Christmas tree. So we really did enjoy it. It was really the highlight of the whole winter, I guess, except when we had snowmen. And I can't remember anything particular other than that Christmas tree event that we had at school, at a church that was really outstanding at that time. But I never got to know my father's father until later when we went up to Greenville. They lived on the old Studebaker farm, and it was a beautiful old brick house. Oh, just gorgeous, windows clear to the floor. And they were on a curve, and they were back in the triangle of the curve over on this side, which was looked up the road, and we could see people coming down. And later, when the streetcar was put in, that streetcar followed that road. So, and he was a great fellow. He had been a Civil War man, and he was a great fellow to tell stories, and he just enjoyed it more than the ones who listened, I think. But my father's mother's father had been in the Civil War, but he had been sent to Texas. They were living in Kansas at that time. Well, she wasn't born yet, but they lived in Kansas, and he went down there and he died in a typhoid epidemic, so she never got to see her father at all. But my grandmother raised four children, and they all came to Ohio to live. Her people were Ohio people, and quite an old family in the southern part of Ohio, so we got to know them fairly well. But her oldest sister moved here to Portland, and one time after a number of years ago, we came back here to visit. This cousin, her youngest daughter, laughed, and she said when they came in from Portland to visit with us, we looked them over, and she says, well, the girls wear dresses, don't they? So I don't know what they were supposed to wear. We thought they should wear, they were something from a foreign land. Well, anyway, I went on and I graduated from high school in Greenville, Ohio in 1911. Then my father was sure I should have to be a teacher, and I could care less. It was the most annoying thing I ever tried to do. And I was such a poor hand, so I know it was a good thing that I didn't continue. Well, I couldn't have because I didn't enjoy it. The children would have got nothing there, neither would I. But after I had been out of school about 4 years, I decided I was going to be a nurse. So I went to Dayton and entered the Fine Valley Hospital as a probationer. I was there about 6 or 8 weeks, something like that. Developed appendicitis, and they took my appendix out and sent me home afterward. So I thought, well, I'd never go back. But a year later, I went back and rejoined my school and continued, and then graduated from trading school in 1918. And my first position was in a mining hospital in West Virginia. It was the lovely little place, Sheltering Arms was the name of the hospital. And we lived on the Ohio, it was on the Ohio River, and we'd go down to Charleston on the B&O and come back on the C&O on the other side of the river, and then come over to the hospital on a ferry to get over to the hospital. But there was a doctor there who was... I don't know. I had never seen on ethical doctors. I didn't know that there was such a thing at that time. And one of the executive's wives came in to be delivered, and he just tore that woman. It was just unmerciful. And I said, after the delivery's over, I said to him, "Aren't you going to repair her?" "Oh, no," he says, "we'll wait. She'll come back and they'll have another fee out of them then." So I thought, well, I don't want to be involved in anything like that. So I left and went to Charlotte, North Carolina, at a Presbyterian hospital, and I was there a year. And there was a big army cap. I didn't know it when I told them that I would come and work there. But there were a number of soldiers going down on the train from the Sheltering Arms from West Virginia to North Carolina, and I met some of them. And later, they brought a man in that was in their regiment. And and we were married, and we went to Harrisburg to live, because when the camp disbanded, he was sent to Harrisburg on some special duty up there, and we were there about a year. And then my little boy was coming to this world, so we went back to my home, Greenville, Ohio. And he was born there, and he was the most beautiful baby that was ever born. No other child ever was so pretty as he was. And I thought, I was just telling him, Lois, that I never will forgive myself for talking to my mother as I did, because she wanted me to do some things that she thought I should, different kind of food that he should have. And I said, "Mom, I went to school and I learned how to take care of babies, and I'm going to take care of them that way." She'd only raised six, so she didn't know anything about babies, of course. So I really felt so ashamed, and I never shall forgive myself for that. But anyway, he grew up, and after he left, was discharged from the service, and we went to St. Louis and were there a little while, and came on out to California, and we arrived there in the fall of 1919, and we lived in Los Angeles just a short time, and then moved out into the hit foothills and lived in Tahunga, which was an old Indian town too. And we looked down into the San Fernando Valley. It was such a beautiful view. I said, just like when, since we've been up here, that look into the Willamette Valley, just a few lights here and there. And now it's just one solid mass of lights, and that's the way I'm afraid Willamette Valley is going to be. But anyway, we did enjoy it so there. And after a while, things went bad, and his father and I were divorced. But I had joined the American Legion Auxiliary because he was a commander of the Legion and had built the new Legion Hall in Tahunga. And the vice commander and I started going together. I was in the hospital down in Los Angeles, and a neighbor of his said, "Why don't you go see Hazel? There she is, all alone, and you're right here. Why don't you do something about it?" So he came down. And that started things off, so we were married then later. And we were there a while, and after he became so ill, and he had to go to the Veterans Hospital down in Long Beach. And my son at that time had been doing aerial surveys. And they were doing a particular job for the government at that time. And he was due to go to Africa on the job, and it was time for his yearly exam. And when he had his exam, they told him no, he couldn't stay in the service because he had diabetes. And he called me on the phone and he said, "Mom, my whole career is going down the drain." Well, I could have wept with him almost. But it took him a long time to finally get his feet on the ground, because he had saved his money that I gave him in high school to take flying lessons so he could have an opportunity to fly. And then when the war started, he went into the service and was a flyer there. And he told about one time he was ferrying troops back and forth. They took some troops into, and they stayed overnight in Casablanca. And all the men were getting showers and just having a great time. And they got their all soaked up and turned the water off, and they had to put their clothes back on and go into Paris before they could get the soap off. We laughed at it, but anyway, he was in, and then when the war was over, he got out, and he started flying then. And they went into a private company, but the band passed away. They had their headquarters in Burbank. And some of the men decided they would like to continue with the service, so they formed a company. And by that time, of course, Bob wasn't able to fly. So he decided that, well, maybe he'd just wait around and see what came up. So this past year, since we've been here up in Oregon, the old company called him from their New York office and asked him would he train young pilots, because all they know how to do is fly visually. I mean, by instrument, and he was teaching them how to do visual flying. So when after he developed this diabetes, of course, he had to take medication and a special diet, always. And his wife is very, very particular about his diet. So she always goes with him when it's possible. So with me with him, it was kind of a handicap. So I came to Canada to live. So I've been there since last December now.
Oh, I need to interrupt. Hoppy was talking about
it's just hard to pick out anyone.
Oh, thing. Yes, I think so.
Yeah, go ahead now.
But I forgot to tell you about one lesson that my father taught me. In this town of Greenville, it was, of course, long before Prohibition, and there was a saloon just about across the street from where my father worked in a lumber yard. And as I went home one morning from getting some things from town from my mother, the thing that startled me, and because I just didn't know anything like that ever happened, I saw a woman going to this one saloon, great big black plume and the most beautiful black dress on I think I ever saw. And I stopped and told my father, "I just saw a lady go in that saloon." "Oh no, Hazel," he said, "you didn't see a lady." And I knew I'd seen a lady go in there, and I pondered that all the way home. And when I got home, I told my mother about it. She said, "She may have been a woman, but she was the lady."
Right.
And I that was one thing that just really made such an impression through me.
Oh.
For me all through my life.
Right.
My father taught us many things of that sort of process, so it was really wonderful.
Well, let me stop a minute.
Talmud gets these cassettes all the time from Salem, so I know how they can get mixed up sometimes. But after Mr. Lau became so ill and was in the hospital, I started to get up one morning, and I couldn't walk. And I thought, my stars, what in the sun has happened to me? So I called this woman who was my neighbor, and asked her, could she please get a chair for me to walk to the bathroom. So she knew where I kept the key on the outside, and she came over and got the key settled, and I went to the bathroom. So after I got settled a bit, I called my son, and I went to the, saw the doc, I called the doctor, and he sent me to the hospital. And when we were there, he said, "I don't believe that she'll ever walk again." So, I fooled him. So I decided that we would move in and with my son and his wife, but that was the thing to do, because we had all of my furniture and everything, and it was just all wrong. But anyway, when Fred was in the hospital, and they told me I wouldn't walk again, I decided I'd sell the house, and Bob, my son, had wanted to come to Oregon because her people lived up at Jewel. And we came up, and he looked around, and he found a house, I guess the first time he began looking for one.
What was his wife's maiden name? Family name?
Who's the...
His, Bob's wife's? You said her family came from Jewel. What
Rankin.
Rankin?
Uh-huh. Oh. He was a veterinarian for Astoria for many, many, many years.
That's where I heard the name.
Mm-hmm. And he died just about 3 months ago. He had gone to Arizona and was going to spend the winter. And when he got down there, the doctor he contacted took all the medication away from him that the doctor here had given him. And he became so vitally, desperately ill. So he flew home, and they took him into the hospital. And I believe that was on Wednesday and Saturday night he died. So that was the last of their family. And the place stands empty over there. I feel so, it was such a nice place in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't see a house any way you looked. You were so completely alone.
Oh, my.
So it's a lovely place over there, but it's no one in there at all.
Where do you send them now?
They live in Banks.
In Banks.
Uh-huh. We have an old house up there. I guess it was the first house on the hill.
Ooh.
We're up on Mallor Road, at the end of Mallor Road. And it had been sideboarded, and then in order to, apparently, instead of painting, they shingled it.
Oh.
It's all shingled on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been painted an orange house.
Oh, my.
And they thought maybe they'd change the color, but everybody talks about that orange house. You know, everybody points, but
mm-hmm.
we live so-and-so from the orange house. So mm-hmm. they decided it's going to be orange from now on. But I've been over now at Camelot, and it's quite a nice place.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the retirement section.
Well, you get out to the bank once in a while.
Do you?
Yes.
With
your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I've met some people, wonderful people at the church.
What church?
The Seventh-day Adventist.
Oh.
It's right there, about a block and a half from
right.
Camelot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's very convenient. And a man, Mr. Frank Reed, who is a poster here in Forest Lawn.
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife come and pick me up and take me to church. But he is not at all well. He's had a pacemaker about the last 3 months now. And he felt so wonderfully well at first.
Mm-hmm.
If something is going on, he's been having a lot of angina.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel terribly concerned for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he is, I hope he's going back to keep it checked with the
doctor.
To keep it checked.
Yes, he's.
I don't need this in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, the last question is what changes in your lifetime do you think have been changes for the worse, and which have been changes for the better in the time that you were young?
I think everything is good in its way. The roads, improvement of roads is one of the better things because it helped to ease transportation considerably. And of course with automobiles I rode an electric car first between Greenville and Dayton when I was in training. And of course, we had no cars at that time.
Oh.
And the first car that I rode in was with a man who had been raised right near where my mother had been raised, out of Greenville at Concord, a little town, a schoolhouse and a church, I think, almost, and a Grange Hall that was there. But I was in training, and his daughter and I were quite good friends. And she she developed a rheumatic condition.
Right.
And they were Christian Scientists. And so she had no care, of course, and she finally passed away. But he came for me one night in his little no-top, little cart almost,
mm-hmm.
and took me out to their house. When he drove up in front of that training school, everybody went to see what was happening out there. I'll never forget that.
Oh, wow.
But they had a beautiful home out in Oakwood. there at Dayton. But she finally passed away. So. And later I visited with his son who had a big plywood mill in Troy, Ohio. And I had never been in a plywood mill at all. So I was very much interested. Because after I finished my nurse's training and I went to Los Angeles County, I went down one day to see the health officer and I told him that I'd like to work if I could. So he set me up in Tahunga. We had a lot of people with tuberculosis up there. It was in the hills, so, and it was a drier climate. Yeah. And
What year were this?
This was about, is it all out of time gets away from me?
Before World War I.
Yes, before 42.
Between wars.
Uh-huh. It must have been about 35 or something of that kind of thing. Yeah. And I was there for a number of years. I went just every.
Did you tell Lois all the different places that you did your nursing, or was that the main place that you did your nursing?
Well, no, I first went, I told her about the one in West Virginia. Because three of our nurses from our training school were selected to go down there. They were making the place over. Uh-huh. And they, I went as a night supervisor and my classmate as a surgery supervisor.
Oh, my.
And the other one went as assistant superintendent of nurses. But I was so upset about the... I was so upset with this night doctor. He was so unethical, and I said, well, I don't want any part of that, so I went to West Virginia. And I was going to tell you when you were talking about these colored people. Uh-huh. We had a colored cook like everyone else that she had down there, and she developed appendicitis, and they put her in a room in the first floor and put screens all around us so no one could see who was in there. Well, she went home, and it wasn't long until she had to return to the hospital. And what did they do? They set up a whole iron bed down in the basement for that woman. Oh, she had to stay down there. Oh, and I went tearing up to the director, and I said, Dr. Alexander, I just think it's a crime for that nice woman to have to stay in that basement. He says, that's a trouble with you northerners. You spoil these niggers so bad no one can live with them. Oh, and hearing tapes of recently on the Ku Klux Klan, I could imagine he could very well have been a Klan. Those poor colored people suffered the tortures of the damned. It was just unbelievable what the white people did to them. And I could understand why many of the colored people still carry that resentment.
Oh, yeah.
You could understand that.
Sure.
But,
where did you? You probably went through all these questions. Where did you meet your husband?
In Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh.
That's a pretty southern town. Mm-hmm. We had a pretty rose garden out in front of it. I went with Dr. Presley one time out to visit a youngster that had been brought into the hospital. Mm-hmm. And you'd never believe they lived in a hovel. It was just like a... As a matter of fact, had no floor, and this poor child was on a pile of rags over on the side of the floor. Uh-huh. And when her mother had come in to see her, she was dressed up like she was Mrs. Vanderbilt. Uh-huh. Where she kept her clothes, I wouldn't even begin to know. But that was really something. So I had an education there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to stop this for right now.